And Abby and I hadn't had any children, and just thinking, what would it be like to be a father for the first time? And having that joy of expectation of the first child, as the first child is always just unique and special. It's your first one. And then having to face the reality that any day might be the day that you say goodbye. Imagine feeling the roller coaster of hope and despair, ups and downs, the fighting for life every day that became. You know, the truth is that most of us would do anything for our kids. And many of us as well imagined what it would be like to feel what Travis and Kate felt and to be in their shoes as they struggled those first several months and then years with the pregnancy and birth complications of Hattie. John chapter 4 talks about a story that occurs between Jesus and a man who's desperate. He's back in Cana, where he's turned water into wine, one of his early miracles in John. He's already been here. People know who he is. In fact, it's kind of the area near where he grew up. And he meets this man from Capernaum, an official whose son is sick. Now, this man is an official, and he's probably a Roman Gentile officer serving in Herod's court in some capacity. He's not a Jew. And as a side note, it's interesting how John kind of clues us in on some things through the mentioning of this man's status as an official. We've seen now three different stories of individuals come seeking Jesus. One a Jew by birth, a religious leader, a Jew of Jews, if you want to use that term. The second, a Samaritan woman, a half-breed Jew at the well, an outcast of society. And now a Gentile, an unclean man, but a man of ranking status in his community as an officer and official. And all of these people have a place at the table of the kingdom of God. No matter what background, no matter what status they have, Jesus takes a moment with each of these people. And this man finds out that Jesus is in town, and he goes to him, he finds Jesus, and asks him to come heal his son. And Jesus' response shocks me. Did it shock you when it was read? Did you hear how Jesus responds to this desperate father asking for a healing remedy for his son? He says, unless you see signs and wonders, you won't believe. It's kind of a rough thing to say to a poor father who's desperate for his son to be healed, isn't it? You would think, Jesus, can't you have a little bit more compassion than that? If we dig a little bit further, though, we understand that Jesus isn't just talking to this father. The you there in the original language is plural. There are other people listening in on this conversation, and he almost turns and says to them all, you won't believe unless there's a sign. Verse 44, we didn't read a couple verses before our scripture reading, tells us that Jesus is back in his hometown, and John makes a mention of the fact that a prophet has no honor in his hometown. Jesus knew going back home was going to be difficult. You ever gone back home before? People remember you as a boy, not the man that you are, the woman that you are now. And sometimes it's hard to convince people of who you are, the individual that you are now, not you were. And so Jesus knows that this is going to be difficult, and he says to everyone listening, the people that he grew up with, you won't believe unless there are signs and wonders, challenging them. But this father, this desperate father, is undeterred. He is insistent, and he won't let it drop. He says, sir, come down before my child dies. You have to pause and think, what is this guy going through? It's likely that this man didn't grow up in a family where they taught him about God at all. He probably has heard through various people, this man, Jesus, this person that does signs and wonders and miracles, he's heard about him and he's interested, admired him, thinking he's somebody special. And his son is deathly ill and he's desperate. What would you do? Of course, you'd do anything you could. You'd go see the guy that everybody talks about can heal the sick and cause the lame to walk and the blind to see. He walks over 17 miles to find Jesus. Capernaum and Cana are about 17 miles as the crow flies. And from the way the story is worded, we know that this trip back and forth took the man over two days probably, to make the trip there and back, because he believes something can happen if he can just find Jesus. So when Jesus tells him, after talking with him for just a moment, "Go, your son will live," he does. He leaves believing the word that Jesus spoke to him, is what the passage says. And as the story goes, he goes back to his hometown. His servants come running out to meet him, and they say, "Master, your son is healed." The question is asked, "Well, when did he get better?" And the man understands that the same time that Jesus told him, "Your son will live," is the same moment that his son got better. And the next sentence is interesting to me. It says, "He himself believed, and all his household." Which is funny, because I thought back in verse 50, if we read the passage right, it also says that the man left believing in the word that Jesus said, right? So how can this man believe the word that Jesus said, go on his way, travel back home, and then later believe? Ken Davis is a Christian writer and comedian. And he talks about this story about his class in college, his speech class. And if you've taken a college speech class, you know that, you know, pretty much they throw you up in front of the room, tell you to give a speech, and kind of throw you to the wolves. And you have very little time to prepare for these speeches. Well, Ken Davis was supposed to speak on something that he had to convince people about. And so he decided to talk about the law of the pendulum. And so he tells this story about preparing a speech about pendulums. And the premise of his speech was that a pendulum will never reach the same height that it began at. You ever swing a pendulum back and forth? You've seen it before. It falls continually less and less distance until it stops. And so his premise was, a pendulum will never reach the same point at which it was released before. And he demonstrates on the board with a little string with a tack on it and a little weight suspended. And he gives the physical laws of nature that describe how this happens, that it's impossible with the laws of physics for this weight to return to its original point of release. And then after this speech is over, he asks the class if they believe in the law of the pendulum. And they say, "Yes, we do." And then he invites his professor to come up front. And he asks his professor to sit on a table with a chair on it, with his back against the concrete wall. And he goes up to the front of the room where he had suspended crudely from the ceiling a 250-pound weight on a rope, brings the rope and the weight up to his professor's nose, and again asks the question to his professor this time, "Do you believe in the law of the pendulum?" The professor says, "Yes." His lip beginning to quiver and sweat beginning to form on his brow as he noticed him talking there. And he releases the weight. The weight goes back and it starts to return. And just about the time when it starts to get close to the professor, he dives out of the way. Ken said he's never seen a guy dive so fast in his life. And he said, "Class, does he believe in the law of the pendulum?" "No!" There's a story in Mark chapter 9. A man and his son. The man brings his boy, who's possessed with a demon, and he brings him to Jesus. It's a very similar story to the one in John chapter 4, except for the difference being that this boy has a demon instead of being sick. And he brings him physically to Jesus to heal him. And they talk, and Jesus says to the man, "All things are possible for the one who believes." And the father says something. He says, "Lord, I believe. Help my unbelief." The truth is that most of us live between the believing and the unbelief. We know in our head sometimes what our heart fails to grasp. We know in our head that Jesus has the power to heal, but we struggle to understand how that's going to happen. We know that God provides. In our head, we've heard these words. We know, our knowledge tells us. But the bills keep coming and the bank account keeps looking worse. And so when we live between the belief and the unbelief, what do we do? How do you handle the doubt? How do you handle the lingering questions that happen after you think that you believe, but you're not quite sure? Well, the man in our story does something significant that might clue us in. John says that he went on his way after Jesus tells him, "Your son will be healed." He goes home. And I imagine that as he traveled home, that half a day's journey or however long it took him, he still had questions. He still doubted. He probably didn't know for sure when he got home what it would be like, if his son really would be healed or not, or if maybe he was just hoping on a prayer that something different would be the case when he got home. He still wasn't quite sure how this was going to work, but he kept on. In Matthew 17, we find the parallel passage to the story in Matthew 9 about the man and his demon-possessed son. And Matthew records a few different details than Mark does about the story, because in Matthew, the account goes like this. Before the man brings his son to Jesus, he brings him to the disciples. He brings him to Jesus' disciples, asking them if they can heal this demon-possessed son of his. And the disciples try to cast this demon out, and they just can't. And so they come to Jesus. Jesus casts the demon out. And after this, you know, everybody leaves and everything quiets down, the disciples pull Jesus aside and they ask the question, why couldn't we cast it out? Fair question, right? What was different about you? Why couldn't we do this? And Jesus says, if you have faith like a grain of mustard seed, you will say to this mountain, move from here to there, and it will move, and nothing will be impossible for you. You see, the disciples had faith, but they didn't have faith. They had belief, but a good deal of unbelief as well. But Jesus says that all it takes is faith like the grain of a mustard seed. You don't need to know how it's going to all work out. You don't need to be able to figure it out and calculate it just right. Just believe and keep on. In the early 2000s, Mercy Me, a Christian band, came out with several albums, became one of the top-selling albums of the decade, and cemented their place in Christian contemporary music. Their third album was one of my favorites. It's called Undone. And at the end of that album, the last song, the shortest song on that CD, is a song called Keep Singing. And I want to read you the lyrics. It says, another rainy day, I can't recall having sunshine on my face. All I feel is pain, and all I want to do is walk out of this place. But when I am stuck and I can't move, when I don't know what I should do, when I wonder if I'll ever make it through, I got to keep singing. I got to keep praising your name. That's the only way that I'll find healing. Can I climb up in your lap? I don't want to leave. Jesus, sing over me. I got to keep singing. I don't want to leave. You're everything I need, and I got to keep singing. Augustine was this guy that lived in the early 300s, 400s AD. He was a Christian philosopher, theologian from Africa. And he wrote a sermon one time, and in this sermon is this quote, understanding is the reward of faith. Therefore, seek not to understand that thou mayest believe, but believe that thou mayest understand. It's kind of a complicated way of saying a very simple thing. Sometimes you and I try to figure it out and understand it before we believe. Have you ever done this before? You calculate the risk. You try to figure it out in your head how it might work, and then you have faith. And then you believe. Well, if I can calculate the chance of survival here, maybe I'll go through with the surgery. Or maybe if I can figure out how much exactly we have in the budget, how much cushion we have, I'll take the pay cut, or we'll buy that car, or we'll do this. And if I can figure out the chances outweigh the disadvantages, then I'll believe. But that's not how faith works, is it? Augustine says, believe so that you may understand. And so when the official arrives home, he understands and then he believes. His unbelief, the little bit of doubt that still remained, became belief. He believed before, but now he understands. One of the things that always struck me about Travis's blog on Hattie was his honesty. And I'm sure as he penned those words, recounting the emotions that they were feeling at the time and all of the experience that they'd had, he was afraid. And Travis talks about several times his moments of fear about what the future may hold and the uncertainty that there was at many times in that journey through the hospital with Hattie. But he also knew who held the future. And I've never asked Travis, you know, what was going on in his mind through those months and weeks and years after the birth and the uncertainty that there was. Maybe some of you have had this conversation with him. But if going off of what was on his blog tells me enough, I'd say that he believed, but he probably struggled too. Struggled with the doubt. Struggled not being able to understand it. But his core told him that there is a God. And that God is faithful. And even when it doesn't look like it's going to work out, it's going to be okay. And I'll understand it later. And so this morning I ask you the question. Do you believe? Maybe it's in your head and not in your heart just yet. Maybe there's a little bit of doubt and that's okay. But are you going to keep moving? Are you going to go home and see what happens when you go home? Or are you going to hang out till you figure it out and wait and doubt? This morning we have a song of invitation. We sing it every week. And you're welcome to respond in whatever way you may need to respond. I don't know what's going on in your life. Maybe today is the day that you decide to follow Jesus with the snow coming down outside. This baptistry is more than warm and ready for anybody who needs to make that decision. Why don't you come in any way you need to respond as we stand and sing.